I'll start with this. All I really need to know, I learned from Noah's Ark. Number one, don't miss the boat. Number two, don't forget that we're all in the same boat. Number three, plan ahead. It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. Number four, stay fit. When you're 600 years old, someone might ask you to do something really big. Number five, don't listen to critics. Just get on with what has to be done. Six, build your future on high ground. Number seven, for safety's sake, travel in pairs. Number eight, two heads are better than one. Number nine, speed isn't always an advantage. The snails were on boat with the cheetahs. Number 10, when you're stressed, float a while. Number 11, remember that the ark was built by amateurs. The Titanic was built by professionals. Number 12, remember that woodpeckers inside are a larger threat than the storm outside. 13, no matter the storm, when God is with you, there's a rainbow waiting. Good morning, and we are, we've been going through Moses' books. Some time ago we went through Genesis, and we talked about Noah's Ark and other things that Moses left, told us about the history of the ancient world. And now we are journeying through Exodus, now closer to our period. And we're trying to learn as many as things that are in front of us. So as we discuss today, look at Exodus chapter 19 and 20 and the lessons that are there. Here in this 19 and 20, God is going to meet the Hebrews and he's going to give them the commandments, the 10 commandments and the other commandments. So we're going to talk about that today in our session. So our title is, today's title is People Meet God. We're going to talk about Exodus chapter 19 and 20. That's our study for the week. And we're going to have 3 points. I'm going to introduce them today. Number one, God has carried us on eagle's wings. We read it in chapter 19, how God tells the Israelites that he has brought them out of Egypt, the land of bondage, and he has carried them on eagle's wings. I'm making a connection that God has also carried us on eagle's wings. And we're going to talk about what I mean by that. Number two, if we fully obey him and keep his covenant. So God tells the Israelites, if you fully obey him and keep his covenants, it's going to lead us into the third point. Then we will be his treasure possession, kingdom of priests, and a holy nation. So we're going to talk about this three subjects. Here's our text, one of the text. So I've color-coded a little bit. So I've numbered them also. There's number one, the red. Number two, that's our second point. Number three is our, the green is our, the third point. So the first point was, God has carried them on eagle's wings, and God is going to carry also has carried us on eagle's wing. So I'm going to read this whole text and we're going to talk about it. Exodus 19, verse 3, we're going to read through 8. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, this is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourself have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you'll be my treasure possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you'll be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words the Lord has commanded him to speak. The people all responded together, "We will do everything the Lord has said." So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. So we're going to talk about this first point, how God says in verse 4, "You yourself have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." You know, we've been talking about this for weeks now, how God has heard the Hebrews' cries, and he sent Moses to deliver the people of Israel out of the land of bondage. And initially, Moses talks to the Pharaoh and asks him to let God's people go. But he's obstinate. He refuses. And there are going to be 10 plagues. There are 10 plagues that God inflicts on Egypt. And eventually, when the Hebrews are leaving Egypt, he takes them to the edge of the water. He splits the waters, and the Hebrews pass through the waters. And when the Egyptians follow them, the waters are closing on them, and all of the army is drowned. So, and then when they cross onto the other side, into the desert, wilderness, they're hungry, they're thirsty. So they cry out, and God provides them manna in the morning, quail in the evenings. And when they're thirsty, Moses hits a rock, and a few million people have water to drink and to cook, and perhaps to bathe, to wash their clothes. And so God is reminding them that how he has carried the Hebrews on eagle's wings and brought them to himself. I was thinking about that a little bit. You know, yesterday we were studying the Bible, and he was talking about how there was a time in his life he was mindful of God and he prayed to God. And somehow he felt connected, somehow. But I was just thinking about myself. Years ago, you know, I wanted to, when I lived in Istanbul, I wanted to move to Switzerland initially before I came here, to Geneva, because I had a relative who was a clergy. I was probably 16. And you're going to say, why you wanted to move to Switzerland? Well, I thought maybe I can actually learn a couple of languages because they're they speak multiple languages there. In Switzerland, I believe they speak English, French, and German. But also my cousin was a clergy. I thought to myself, he was not married. I could stay with him. Maybe I can actually be a holier person. I knew I never heard the scriptures until almost I was 18, because my family did not read the Bible and the church that I used to go did not teach the scriptures. But like, I thought that maybe this clergy will help me to be a more holy person. I thought to myself, wow. It didn't happen. I didn't go to Switzerland. I ended up in the United States, went to university in New York, and then somebody invited me to a Bible study. And that's how I came around the scriptures. But I thought to myself, you know, God has been working behind the scenes to brought me to him. And I was just thinking about the person that we studied the Bible yesterday. He was making those kind of inferences that God was working in his life even before he started to study the Bible with us. And I know some of you in the room also express how God was working in your life to bring you to where you are, how God was carrying you also in eagle's wings to bring us to him, to himself. So, and also that tells us that like God is working in every person's life. obviously, sometimes we're oblivious. We don't really know it until maybe later, until it becomes clear to us. But God is working in people's lives so that they can be brought to him. Even the prodigal son story, you know, when the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15 goes away, conveniently there's a famine in the land, that he becomes hungry, that he cannot provide for himself. How convenient. Sometimes God creates a famine in our lives so that we will come to our senses. So that's my first point. God has carried the Hebrews on eagle's wings to himself to meet them in the wilderness. God also does the same thing for us, whether we have eyes to see or ears to hear. But think about your past and all the things that has happened to you, and why God allowed those things to happen to you. And perhaps that God was working in your life too, for you to become more mindful, come to your senses, so that we will be able to hear him. We will be able to see him at this time. Our title was, The People Meet God. This is the next paragraph we're going to read in Exodus 19, verse 16. On the morning of the third day, there was a thunder and lightning with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. They stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like a smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. So we have a picture of God brings the Hebrews to the wilderness, and he's doing all these things to kind of like prepare them to meet him. There's thunder, there's lightning, there's a very loud trumpet blast that is going to get louder and louder. There's fire, there's smoke, there is like earthquake. The mountain trembled violently. And it's just like I tried to actually find a video of this thing, and there's like a couple of videos. Some of them perhaps give you a picture of what it might have looked like. But it's a very terrifying scene, because you can see that they're terrified at the end of it. But I thought to myself, I wonder why God chose to appear to the Hebrews this way. You know, when Jesus is baptized in the New Covenant, in the New Testament, you know, people that are watching him, they see a dove coming from heaven, the heavens opened up, and there's a voice. It says, "You are my son whom I love, with you I'm well pleased." That's the way that God appeared to the, or spoke to the people in the New Covenant. None of these like terrible sounding and very frightening scenery. I wonder, you know, why he chose. It says it in the next paragraph, that so that the fear of God would be in them. When the people saw, this is Exodus chapter 20, verse 18. When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain and smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself, we will listen. But do not have God speak to us or we'll die." Moses said to the people, "Don't be afraid. God has come to test you so that the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning." The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. It's ironic that everybody is terrified, but not Moses. In verse 21, the people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. Somehow, he knew God's nature. And none of these things that God chose to reveal himself through meant Moses was concerned about or fearful about. Let's talk about the second point. Our second point is, if we fully obey him and keep his covenant. That's in verse 5. So I'll read verse 4. Actually, I'll start again. Verse 3, that Moses went up to God, the Lord called him from the mountain and said, this is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob, what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourself have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, I'll stop there. I circle the if and I circle the fully. So this whatever is about to come, the third point, that you will be my treasured possession, is conditional to this verse 5. What is that? If you obey me fully. Like, I just feel like that is the challenge. How do we fully obey him and keep his covenant? And what is a covenant? We've been talking about this thing for a while. Again, we talked about the marriage covenant where two parties agree to be faithful to each other. And so God is like giving them a covenant. We call it the old covenant. In the New Testament, we have the new covenant. And the condition is for us to fully obey and keep his covenant. And same thing in the new covenant. So in a little bit, God is going to give them the Ten Commandments, and he's going to give them all the other commandments that are coming in the next several books, in Leviticus, in Numbers, and Deuteronomy. God is going to give his entire law for them we talked about how the Ten Commandments perhaps were the focus of all those scriptures that were coming. Like, it was like the synthesis of the summary, perhaps. Somebody said that in the group, and I thought it was a good one. I thought, well, maybe that's something to that. We should be meditating on that. So the Ten Commandments were to kind of embody the rest of the commandments. Other commands will point itself to it. So they were asked to, well, let's talk about them, and then we'll talk about us. So God gives them 10 commandments, initially in chapter 20. And I put them into two different tablets here, 1 through 4. It says, do not worship any other gods. Do not make any idols. Do not misuse the name of God and keep the Sabbath holy. Goes to the left column. And eventually in Exodus chapter 20, verse 3 through 8, we have those 10 commandments. What do they say? It says in verse 3, you shall have no other gods before or besides me. There's a footnote in our Bible, so some of them have translated before, some of them translated besides me. Number 2, you shall not, this is verse 4, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or on the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. We have a little footnote here. I put 1 and 2. If you look at the verse 5, you shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. We're studying the Bible with people, and people are saying, why would he punish the children? What did the children do? And how we talked about, sometimes you get a credit card offer, and the offer is, you're going to get 100,000 miles, right, if you use this credit card. But there's a footnote, and the footnote is in, like, page 17. It comes like with a big disclosure sometimes. Sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's a big deal. But like I put, so the disclosure for that verse is, if the children insist of being evil, so God will punish the children of the person to the third or the fourth generation if the children are insisting to be evil. And then he says, verse 6, by showing love to 1,000 generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. Is that right? So if the children, and again, as there's like a footnote I put in. And what does it say? If the children continue to love and obey God. And I put Ezekiel 18. If you read Ezekiel 18, it will make it clear that if the father is righteous and if the son sins, God will punish the son. If the father is evil and the son is righteous, and God will not, he will live. The son will live. So clearly, we need to see the big picture to understand some of these teachings and not just like take it at face value. Otherwise, like we don't understand the nature of God to be able to understand some of these commandments. Number seven, verse seven, talks about not to misuse the name of the Lord your God. Number eight is about keeping the Sabbath holy. We're not going to talk about them in detail. I found this somewhere. So left side of the column is our relationship with God. Right side of the tablet is our relationship with one another. So there are six on the right side, four on the left side. So those were the first four God gives to them as Ten Commandments in the first tablet. And on the right side, you have these commandments. 12, honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. And then I put Ephesians chapter 6, verse 2, which is the first commandment with a promise. Paul says, calls it the first commandment with a promise. How could it be the first commandment? This is the number five commandment, fifth commandment. So apparently there was some understanding that the tablets, the first section, was about our relationship with God on the left side, and the six, 5 through 10, was about our relationship with each other. So this was the first commandment on that tablet. Is it plausible? Yes. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. And you shall not cover your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. After our Bible study on Wednesday, I think somebody made a comment about it, but it was done afterwards. So every nation on the face of the earth has a constitution, I believe. Constitution is the law of the country. Hebrews did not have a constitution. This was their constitution. So when somebody wrongs somebody among the Hebrews, they will go to the judges. Initially, Moses was the only judge. At chapter 17, actually chapter 18, Jethro, his father-in-law, tells him, hey man, you're going to wear yourself out and everybody else. Why don't you find other people and put them in charge of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, so that if anybody has a dispute, they can use the law and judge between the two people or groups. But Hebrews did not have a constitution. They did not have another law. This was their law. I'm going to read from verse 4 again. You yourself have seen what I did to Egypt, how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you'll be my treasure possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you'll be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. My third point is, then we will be his treasure possession, kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So God brought us out of our lives to him. Now I'm talking about us, the people in the room. He carried us on eagle's wings so that we can hear him, we can see him, that we can now seek him. And then he's telling us that if we obey him fully and keep his covenant, let's talk about that a little bit. In the new covenant, Jesus comes in and gives us a new covenant. We're not the Hebrews. The Ten Commandments and the law that was given to them only. And we talked about how sometimes it feels like it was really not so personal, like the relationship that he had with them was like he showed himself in a terrifying way. They were so afraid, they didn't want to see God or hear God, so they wanted Moses to talk to them. In the New Covenant, it's not like that. Jesus calls them, Moses gave you this law because your hearts were hard. So God chooses to reveal himself to them in a such and such way, not necessarily in the New Covenant. New Covenant is very different. We have Matthew chapter 5, 6 and 7, some of the law that Jesus gives. He takes some of the Ten Commandments, revises it, but he gives a higher command to love God with all of our hearts and to love our neighbor as ourselves, which fulfills all the commandments of the old covenant and much more. But same applies in verse 5. If you obey me fully, it's a condition. And what's the problem sometimes these days? People are creating groups, but they're not interested in being fully obedient. They want to have a little bit of Christianity in there, make it a little bit fun. But I'm not really sure if they're interested in obeying all of them. And again, sometimes it's difficult to obey all of them, so I don't want to necessarily simplify it. And these are just words, but at least like we can see that like God wanted his people to obey him fully and keep his covenant. And we're asked to do the same thing in our generation, in our time, to obey him fully, everything that Jesus said, everything that the New Testament teaches us, and to keep the covenant of blood that Jesus introduced. Only then we can be, the third point, then we will be his treasure possession. Kingdom of priests and a holy nation. I thought to myself, what is a treasure possession? What is a treasure possession? You'll be my treasure possession. Treasure possession is the most valuable thing you have. Treasure possession is the most valuable, one of the most valuable thing you own. And that's how God feels about those people who he brought them out of slavery, and they're obedient to him fully, and they're keeping his covenant. He looks at all the nations. He looks at all the people of the earth, and he sees you and me. He says, you know what? You are my treasure possession. I see billions of people, but I see you as my treasure possession. You're precious. You're honored. And I love you. Only then that we can be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. How can they be? How could they be holy? And how could they be priests? By being obedient, Moses' covenant. This is the only way we can be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation ourselves. Now we are the holy nation. We are, as the people that God has called, that have responded and decided to obey fully, we make this new nation, a holy nation. Why are we holy? Because Jesus made us holy and we're fully obedient, or we're pursuing this life with that kind of zeal. Kingdom of priests. When you think of priests, what do you think? Somebody's totally dedicated to the work of God. That's what we're asked to be. If you have studied the Bible with us, that's what we're teaching in our group individually, as a collectively. We're trying to be priests. Kingdom of priests. So if we are a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, who's the king? Who was the king in the old covenant? Who's the king in the new covenant? Was Moses their king? Absolutely not. I don't see that language at all. God's supposed to be their king. This is supposed to be his kingdom on earth through the Hebrews. He was always looking for people that he can be their king, their father. And he's calling us in the new covenant through Jesus to this. If we obey him fully and keep his covenant, the new covenant, then out of all the nations, we will be treasure possession, will be his treasure possession. All of the whole earth is mine. All 8 billion people are his. You will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So I color-coded it. The next sentence I highlighted in yellow. That's the fourth color I'm using. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words of the Lord had commanded him to speak. The people all responded together, "We will do everything the Lord has said." So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. This is how you make a covenant. God is making an offer, and you have a choice to respond. Whether you're gonna comply with his requests. And that's what we have done. This is what we do with everybody who studies the Bible. We present what Jesus has asked his followers to do and to be. They have to decide whether they will do everything the Lord Jesus has asked, has said. In conclusion, I have 3 points here. How God is talking in chapter 19 of Exodus, how God has carried them, the Hebrews, on eagle's wings, and meditate on it, how much he had done to bring them to that point, and how much God has done to bring you to where you are and where I am at. God has been working behind the scenes to bring us to where we are today. Number two, he's expecting full obedience, full commitment to his covenant. Not just like 95%, but 100%. Again, you're going to say, man, are you 100%? Oh, absolutely not. This is just a goal. We want to be these kind of people, that we will not ignore any of the teachings of Jesus. There'll be no commandment of God because we're committed. Can we do it? We will always fall short. And I'm the first one to raise my hand about it. But we're committed fully to obey him. Everything that the New Testament commands us, everything that Jesus told us to obey. Only then that we will be his treasure possession, kingdom of priests and a holy nation. God was always looking for a kingdom. God wanted to have his own kingdom where angels are his army and the people on earth who are disciples of Jesus are his citizens for this kingdom. That we will be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation.